The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, February the 21st. It's time to go racing, and the Sprint Car capital of the world is Lincoln Speedway opens the season here in central Pennsylvania on Saturday. And to get things started, we'll talk with two of the champions from this past season, Lance DeWeese, and we'll get an update on his medical condition and when he may return to Sprint Car racing. And the Edge, Brian Monteith, the four-time defending champion of the Lincoln Speedway. We'll also talk with Rod Ord from the Pennsylvania Sprint Series, the 305 Sprinters here in central Pennsylvania. The Sprint Car Show is brought to you by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway, and by Kinzer Air Filters, proudly made in the USA. The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We're joined now by Lance DeWeese out of Fayetteville, Pennsylvania, as we take a tour around Pennsylvania as the season opens here in the Keystone State on Saturday at the Lincoln Speedway. Lance, of course, hurt very seriously in a sprint car accident in October at the Lincoln Speedway. Lance, always a pleasure to speak with you. How close are you to returning to racing?
I don't know truly yet what my return date will be. We're in the rehab stage of it now. Everything's going good. I go back and see my surgeon on March 7th. And, you know, my whole deal has been beginning in April has kind of been the shoot date. That's the full 6 months that they wanted me to take for the healing process. But we'll learn a lot more on March 7th when I see the surgeon again.
As a racer, can you tell if you are close to hitting that target date, or do you still feel that there might be a little more time to make sure that you are properly healed before you do get back behind the wheel of a sprint car?
The problem with this, the injury I have is, I mean, I felt great the whole time. After the surgery, I felt great. Beginning of January when I got out of the neck brace, I felt real good. I mean, today I feel great, really, probably some of the best I've felt in a long, long time. But it's not the fact of me feeling good or not. It's the fact of the fusion that they letting it be as strong as it can be, and the longer I can wait, the better that is.
Looking back on your career, is this one of the worst accidents you have had?
Oh, it is the worst accident I ever had, the worst injury I ever had. I've been very fortunate. I've not really been hurt in a sprint car over the 27 years that I've been doing it. So, yeah, it's the worst injury. It really opened my eyes a lot to a lot of things. And there'll be a lot more precautions taken now when I get back in the race car. The problem with this injury is now I have to be really cautious with my safety stuff to make sure I don't have no other impacts like I just did.
Can you address what type of cautions you're going to have to look at? And also, as far as we have come in the advancements of safety, is there more that can be done when an axle breaks to try to help prevent any kind of serious injury, such as the one you sustained with the fractured C6 vertebrae?
Well, yeah, I mean, the problem with my type of injury, and it's kind of a common injury in a sprint car. It's a compression injury. I do not wear a neck brace of any type. I did not. With that said, that did not have nothing to do with my injury. A Hans or a Hyberg or any of the neck braces out there that guys are using in the market would not stop my injury at all. It's from pure compression. It's from the body. The easiest way to put it is from if you were sitting still and somebody drives your head down with a sledgehammer. That's the type of injury it has. And really, if you look at sprint car racing in generally, and even some midget racing stuff, is most of the serious injuries come from compression. Guys with bad backs, broken backs, which I did 2 years ago. Tim McCready hurt himself in a midget, I think, from a compression at Chili Bowl. John Westbrook hurt himself. That was a compression deal. So, I mean, there's areas that could be looked at. And the one thing I did is my seat's done a lot different than it's ever been done. And actually, Doug Esch, who broke his back, same way, compression, is the one that did it first. And I just took his seat and kind of added a little bit more to it. Just that it currently, you need 3 inches of padding under your butt cheeks to prevent it, to help prevent it from ever happening again. So we worked hard on our seat to get it to where we can add the extra padding. So it's, you know, we're doing that. And now I also have to wear some type of neck restraint because with how my neck is done now, you know, there's less movement capable of doing it.
What was your initial reaction back in the days when the neck devices came out? Were you one that adapted to them right away, or did you shy away from them? And now, what is your thoughts on having to wear them with the, you know, following the injury?
Well, I'm not worried about having to wear one. I'm looking at some other avenues for one. I'm looking at some motocross stuff. I haven't made the decision on what I'm going to use yet, because there's some other ones out there that are not necessarily designed for our type racing that help with compression too. So we've looked at them. Right now, I'm not 100% sure. I've talked to a lot of people about them. Everyone has its pros and cons, so it's just a matter of me just saying, okay, I'm going to put this one on go. I'm not concerned about having to wear one now. I don't think it's a big issue as far as, you know, getting used to or anything. You know, once you're in that race car and moving and racing, you don't even know what's on you.
We're talking with Lance DeWeese, who picked up his 6th track title at Williams Grove Speedway the night before he was injured. 8 wins on the season last year, including the All-Star win at Clinton County, where you picked up the All-Star East Championship as well. Talk a little bit about how 2011 went for you and the Don Owens 30C team.
It was an okay year for us. I was really happy with our Grove title and the Eastern title because that was items that we set out to win. We were leading the overall Speedway Motors Central PA points. We had like a 2-race lead on that when I got hurt, so we were pretty good control of that until we got hurt. So we, probably we're going to win that one too. But, you know, I'm overall pleased with our year. We weren't as fast as we would have liked to have been for most of the year. I was really pleased at the end of the year we made some changes and got some speed back in our race cars. I think we fell behind during the middle of the part of the year. So we, you know, with this extra time off, we've worked real hard on some new stuff, some different stuff, and we're going to have some new stuff later in the year too that I'm really excited about doing.
New stuff in terms of chassis or other components on the race car you just can't talk about?
Just everything, but your whole package. You just work hard on your whole package. You know, we're working hard on our shock program. Later in the year, we'll hopefully have some new chassis ideas out to run. It's catch-22 because you don't want to change everything at one time and be way off base. And I was pretty happy at the end of the year where we were at. So I think, you know, we're going to be okay when we come back out. I just want to be ready for the big shows. And, when I start racing, we're racing hard from day one. It's not like we don't have an easy schedule either. So, we missed the beginning part here in Florida and all. We still, you know, right now have tentatively 80-some shares on our schedule. So we still have a lot of racing to do.
We're talking with Lance DeWeese, who racked up in 7.5 years with Walt Dyer in the famed Brickmobile, 132 wins. You also raced for guys like Joe Hartz and Al Hamilton. Those three guys, very well known in the sprint car ranks. What's the common denominator, Lance, among those three guys that made them so successful as sprint car owners?
The love of the sport, I think, the biggest thing. All three are totally different people, totally different personalities. But it's just the love they have for sprint car racing is what it amounts to. You know, Walter Dyer's owned a race car, a sprint car, for a long time before I ever climbed in it. So did Al. Joe was in it for a good while before I climbed in. But it's just the fact that they love sprint car racing. They, you know, they don't care about any other type of racing they did. And yeah, Walter Dyer today would still own one if, you know, if he could. He's that type of guy. And they're competitive, I think, in their own right. Some of them were more competitive than others and showed, I don't want to say more competitive than others, but probably more emotional or showed the competitiveness outside than inside. But they all were great owners for me.
You picked up your first 410 win in Hagerstown back in 86. You do have an ARDC midget win to your lengthy and well-documented resume. And, of course, you started racing micros back in 1982. As you progressed from 82 to 86 and then to 91 when you were with Walt, what did you form in terms of a vision for what Lance DeWeese, the race car driver, wanted to accomplish? And how did Walt, Joe, and Al help shape you into the one of the most respected drivers out there on the circuit?
Well, it's funny. Back then, I think I was like the most thing I was very respected. All you want to do is race. You didn't think about 10 years down the road or 15 years down the road. You know, nowadays, you know, these kids start getting groomed for, you know, They have planes, okay? You know, they start racing at 13. At 16, they're going to be down south racing something so NASCAR can see them. You know, stuff like that. You know, people are groomed now, more or less. You know, back then, we just wanted to race, and that's all I ever wanted to do. From day one, strapping in a sprint car, that's all I ever wanted to race was a sprint car. I love this sport to death. I think they're the baddest race machines around. There's only a few things that can rival the power-weight ratio to them. And I just enjoy racing, always have. And, you know, I still do to this day after a long time of doing them. So I think biggest was Walter Dyer. He gave me the biggest break I ever had. And we had a great time together of 7.5 years and won a lot of races together, had a lot of fun together. And he was the biggest person that helped me along in my career as far as giving me the shot that nobody else, you know, really would.
You mentioned earlier that you're looking at about 80 races once you are able to get clearance and get back into your race car this season. What do you guys want to accomplish with the upcoming season when you are able to get back behind the wheel of the sprint car?
Well, our goals are kind of about the same every year. We just try to go out and win as many races we can. Really, there's no championships for us to worry about right now because with us getting late started, I mean, we still can, you know, maybe put ourselves in a position to win some if we, you know, it depends on what all happens. But we don't worry about that end as much as we worry about just going out, try to be as fast as we can be and try and improve every week and make our race cars, you know, as quick as they can go and win races. That's what it's all about. If you win races, everything else takes care of itself. This year, you know, I'm really excited about Knoxville this year. After what we learned last year out there, I think we finally kind of come on to what that place likes. So I'm kind of looking forward to that this year, and hopefully, you know, we can have a really good, strong run out there.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Knoxville because also today on our show we were talking with Brian Monteith, and one of the things that he mentioned is the aero package. It's a completely different ballgame out there. What are some of the things that are unique to Knoxville that are not unique to here in central Pennsylvania?
The racetrack is the biggest thing. We don't have any racetracks there kind of like that place. It's a more rounded racetrack. The cars are kind of loaded differently than how we get them loaded back here. And it just takes a different combination than what we run back here. And that kind of shows when you take somebody that runs real good in Knoxville and bring them to Grove and they don't run good here. Excuse me. And the biggest thing about Knoxville is you don't get no laps. I mean, you unload, you have two laps of hot laps. If you're in the first group or first, second group of hot laps, it's normally greasy, so you really don't have no idea which car is going. And the two most important laps of the whole night are after hot laps. So if you unload and are off, you normally don't catch up. And we did a very, very, very good job this year there. Is when we timed bad, that we really made a lot of wholesale changes and was pretty good in the heat and then was really good in our preliminary night feature. And we were good in the A main the first half, and then kind of we messed it up for the second half, but we learned a lot. But, you know, we made a lot of changes quickly to make a change. And it's kind of hard out there to know exactly which car wants. And we finally, I think, came on to it and learned what it likes for those places, and it makes me excited to go back out.
And how much does the weather play into the setup of a car out at Knoxville compared to back here, say at the Grove or Sealands Grove or Port Royal, on a weekly basis?
The weather's not a big issue. The weather's more an issue of the motors, how they run or don't run. We don't have issues in that department. Our motors are built by Brian Morrison. They run everywhere we go. They're very good running motors, and that, I don't have those issues. The biggest issues is it's more of a sweeping corner type racetrack. So, you know, our stuff back here is more of a, I don't want to say stop and go, but that's kind of what they are compared to out there. And your car, just how the timing of the car on how it reacts has to be different, and just how it gets through getting through the middle of the corner is so critical out there. We're back here, like Lincoln, even the Grove, when it gets slick, getting off the corner is very critical. Out there, getting in and getting through the middle is the key, because then you can get off. So it's just a different deal. The closest place probably back home here that we had that has been shut down for a number of years was Penn National Raceway.
Hmm. That's pretty interesting. I was to Penn National a few times in my life, but never thought about that. That is something that I will have to look into and talk with some of the guys that used to race there. That does sound like it's a very interesting observation, Penn National and the Knoxville Raceway. Well, Lance, as always, we greatly appreciate you taking time to stop by and talk with us here on the Sprint Car Show. Hopefully, the doctors will have good news for you coming up on March the 7th, and hopefully you'll get that target date of early April to be back behind the wheel of the Don Owens number 30C machine.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on. I'm happy to be on, and anytime, you know, I'll be there for you to be on the show. And we're looking forward to a strong race year, and I'm just chomping at the bit to get back in, but we are not going, you know, we're just taking our time, not doing nothing dumb with this deal.
That sounds great. Lance DeWeese joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break. And speaking of the Edge, Brian Monteith, we'll talk with him next. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. At Rod End Supply, they have the unique opportunity to be involved with all sorts of auto racing and performance-related industries, including farming equipment. Whether you're running a go-kart, micro sprint, midget, modified, late model, sprint car, or a tractor, Rod End Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performing at your maximum potential. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively with prompt and courteous service. Their promise is to continue to provide superior service with superior products that will keep you in front of your field. To learn more, log on to rodendsupply.com or call Bob Douglas and his staff at 1-800-284-2902. That's 1-800-284-2902. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. Well, welcome back, race fans, to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We continue on our coverage of the Pennsylvania Sprint Car racing scene, and we're joined now by the four-time and defending Lincoln Speedway champion from Phoenixville. They call him the Edge, Brian Monteith. Brian, a pleasure to talk with you, and congratulations on another championship.
Thank you. I appreciate to be on the show.
You know, I have the privilege of covering the Izod IndyCar series, and one of the drivers, Pippa Mann, always says she has to pinch herself now that she's in the IndyCar series when somebody introduces her as the Izod IndyCar series driver. Looking back to that first title in 08, did you envision four straight? And do you sometimes pinch yourself and going, wow, I'm in some pretty heavy company, Lincoln?
Yeah, it just shows how hard this team has worked. The first year everybody sort of thought it was a fluke. Then we backed it up, and now unfortunately, we got the bullseye on the head, and everybody's aiming at us, and now we're the bad guy.
So you look back at 2008, you won the title without any wins, and then you have two very dominating years, the last 2009 and 2010, well over 200 points difference between yourself and second place. And then last year, it was 20 points over Danny Dietrich III. What stands out about winning this fourth championship compared to the other three?
The last one I had to actually work for. It was last lap pass. I had to pick off one person on a restart of one lap to go, and I ended up getting two to seal the deal. And my crew was not a happy camper with me the rest of the entire night, because I was sort of driving defensive. Trying to hold my own, and then when you got to step up the game, you got to go. And them guys didn't like that win.
Take me through that last lap. What was your mindset like, and what were you thinking about knowing you had to get by a car and you only had 0.4 miles to do so?
Most of that's all just luck. I was just hoping I had to stick it on the bottom, and I hope it stayed there. It stayed there, and I made the pass in 1 and 2, and it was nerve-wracking. It was probably one of the – Chris Eich was, because me and him were only 5 points apart or something going into that race, too. That was my second year. And, Chris ain't no slouch either when it comes to pressure time. And it was the same deal. I went in and just sort of rode around there until he went by me, and then I had to step up the game again and start driving like I should. And, it makes my guys – crazy when I do it.
Of course, your car owner Jerry Parrish and your crew chief Scott Zellers. Between the three of you, what's been the key chemistry component that has allowed you guys to have the success of being in the top 10 in the Lincoln points going back to 2005, and also picking up about 36 4-10 wins over the past several years?
A lot goes to Jerry. He basically gives us anything that we need. He really doesn't. He doesn't bark at me too much. Maybe he does to Scott. But Scott, he basically came into it with an open mind. He really didn't know much, so we sort of learned together. And I have a big driving style difference than a lot of people, so that he had to learn that. And now it's the last 2 years, he's done so much homework over the winter that I don't even think twice. He tells me what he's going to do, and I trust him.
Is that how you picked up the nickname The Edge?
They were just, when I came aboard with them guys, they were just trying to think of some kind of catchphrase, and Ford was, even now, them guys just say, go out and run it. We tear it up,
Mm-hmm.
As long as we're going forward, everybody's happy. Even if it comes back in the box, them guys still, as long as I was trying to make something happen and not be stupid, then they know it's a racing deal. They don't get mad at me. So there's really, as a team, there's not a lot of pressure. So it makes life a lot easier to drive.
You've been racing for 30 years. What's the most exhilarating part about being a race car driver?
I actually don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Basically, the most exhilarating time, honestly, is as anybody that does any kind of racing, it's that adrenaline, I guess, junkie that you got right before you push off, as you're just strapped in waiting for the gate to drop or, you know, start the engines. You know what I mean? There's that adrenaline. You sort of can't. I've never skydived or, you know, jumped off a cliff or anything, but I'm sure it's the exact same type of adrenaline junkie. You know what I mean? But there's really, I sort of like the whole deal. I like a lot of the people that I'm involved with. That's even when I was a kid racing in quarter midgets. You know what I mean? I had a lot of friends, and it's more of racing's a big family atmosphere. You know, obviously you don't get along with everybody all the time, but, you know, everybody still respects everybody at the end of the night.
Speaking of quarter midgets, you did quite well for yourself back in the days racing quarter midgets, the national quarter midget champion. How did you get started in it, and what, if any, did you have a dream or goal of when you were racing quarter midgets?
I got started because the Phoenixville dirt track was literally only a mile and a half from my house. My dad was a drag racer, and then he got out of that and started doing the oval track stuff on a crew. And then I don't even know really how I ended up in quarter midgets. He just brought it home one night and, you know, started everything off. That's sort of how that got started. Sort of had a plan. Had at it.
What tracks did you guys go to when you were kids to watch the races outside of the quarter midget stuff?
I basically only went to Grandview. I pretty much grew up at Grandview on a Saturday night watching the modifieds. You know, I watched Fred when he was little or younger than what he is now. You know, coming up through modifieds. You know,
so growing up at a track that is predominantly the modified track, though over the years, the 410s, the URC, the midgets, late models, of course, a big staple there. What pushed you towards the sprint cars, and did you have any thoughts at all growing up watching the modifieds to drive a modified someday?
I always wanted to drive modified. Dad, you know, that was just one thing that we didn't do. We actually, when I was getting about halfway through my quarter midget career, we met up with Bruce Thompson that ran URC, and we became good friends with that family. And, you know, when I graduated quarter midgets, then we actually went on his crew for 2 years because you couldn't race till you're 18 in URC. And then that following year when I turned 18, we ran half a season with URC because we knew everybody, and, you know, Bruce helped us out, and basically, that's how I got started in sprinters. I didn't do micros, didn't have a chance to do anything like that. We basically went from quarter midgets 2 years off and then jumped in a sprinter.
Now, is that back in URC's days when it was a smaller top wing and there was no front wing, or were they starting to introduce the bigger wings at that point?
No, they were the small wing. It was still the small wing. The nose wings were there. I think it wasn't even when I got out. That year I ran URC was still a little wing, because when we went to, we built the 410 and went to Lincoln for the first time, you know, we had that new top wing. So we basically used the same car, but had to buy all the stuff to run the big wings.
Well, I grew up in what many consider one of the finest modified tracks ever, Flemington. And I remember many a night's URC coming in, but that was back in the days when Pouch and Bruce Thompson was there, back when his wife Bev was riding broadsliding with Bev in Erie Auto Racing News, Freddie Berger, and the list goes on and on and on. So those were some good days back in the days, even Jimmy Horton getting behind the wheel and piloting a sprint car around Flemington Fair Speedway. We're talking with The Edge, Brian Monteith, the four-time and defending track champion at the Lincoln Speedway. So tell me about that first 410 race. You're coming out of a 360 series, very well known, and you're taking out and heading into Lincoln Speedway for that first time ever with the 410 and the big wing. What was that day like?
nerve-wracking is probably an understatement. There's a lot of guys don't understand. There's a pretty big learning curve between a 410 and a 360. I enjoy driving the 360s because, to me, it's a lot easier. I know a lot of guys will disagree with me, but to me, it's they're a little bit more tamer than a 410, especially on something like Grandview, a little short tracks. But it's I had fun, and that's sort of why we stayed there. And we actually went to, since we were spitting the bill ourselves, me and my father, you know, we ran 410 because it was, yeah, up to that point, I honestly did not know what Lincoln Williams Grove was. We couldn't even find a racetrack the first time we went to Lincoln. We actually had to stop and ask because we weren't really sure where we were going. Yeah, I grew up in the modified country. You know, most of the people down by me, 2 hours away from central Pennsylvania, don't know what a sprint car is. They know what a modified or late model is, but they don't know what a sprint car is.
That's very true. Have you ever had a chance to get a ride in a modified, or would you, as time goes on here, would the guys allow you ever to jump in just to see what it's like?
Never had the offer. Everybody, you know, talking to Fred and them guys are like, ah, you don't even want to run one of them things anymore. I still like the look of them. I think they're neat. I watched them up at Syracuse when we were up there for the Nationals. Watching them on the Monster Miles, that's an exhilarating deal. I actually didn't get to see the sprinters up there, but yeah, the modifieds were getting around there good enough for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen the sprint cars up there. Trust me. They were getting around pretty good. And truth be known, I talked to Fred one day, and I said, geez, Fred, you're sitting on 99 small block modify wins. He goes, and I'll be sitting there for the rest of my life. I said, okay, Fred, you're not getting back into a modified to get that one win. And interesting enough, this year, of course, the 40th anniversary of Big Diamond Speedway, where Fred was very competitive and won a number of races, he only has one win in the famed Coal Cracker. Hard to believe. As many wins as he has at Big Diamond, 1985 was the only time he won the Coal Cracker race there, the season-ending event for the modified. So in doing an interview with Frank Cozy, he had to literally relearn how to drive because he found out he could not drive a sprint car like a modified. Did Fred say anything to you about that when you talked to him about the modifieds?
He said that he drove them different, but actually, I parked next to Frank a couple of times this year, and I was trying to help him out because I could see where he was struggling trying to drive off the different corner of the car where, in the sprinter, you just can't drive off that corner no more. But the Hoosiers, you can sort of drive off the right rear corner, but you can't do that now with the new Goodyears and stuff. So, now I was trying to help him out, and that's what his biggest fight with himself was try to relearn himself for the last 20 years or forget everything he learned and try to learn over again. And it's tough. Even my guys, the couple of times I ran wingless, I haven't done it. I do like it because it's different. But my guys don't like it because they see me change a couple of habits in me, and it takes me 2 weeks or so to get back to where I'm comfortable again in a wing car. So they don't want me to race the wingless stuff unless you could run it, sort of like Pittman or somebody that Hockett that ran a lot of it between each of it, and you could sort of teach yourself the do's and don'ts of both of them. And that's, I won't ever rule it out because it is fun. Any kind of racing. That's what me and Scott talked about is, we retired or didn't want to do this no more. We thought about going racing a desert truck. Yeah, just something that we have in goals and in life, and that's on my bucket list to do, I guess.
Speaking of racing, what does the 2012 season hold for the Premier Racing team?
Pretty much the same deals it has, I guess, for the last 4 years or so. We're still going to race local. We're we're not 100% sure what we're going to do. I think we're definitely going back to Knoxville because that's just something that you got to keep going at to learn. That track there was by far the differentest racetrack I've ever sat on. Just stuff that you got to learn. If you don't go there, you won't learn some of the aero problems and stuff like that. And we're still talking about Doran Eldora. They still want me to take me there. But other than that, just sort of racing. You know, we actually, there's a lot of people ask, where are you going to go here? Are you going to go there? And are you going to do this? And we actually don't make the decision up till about the night before. They call me and say, hey, we're leaving then. And I tell them, okay, I'll be there.
But you did say on your website that you were looking to venture out and do some racing outside of the normal tracks that you have raced at. Will you be following any of the All-Star East portion of their deal this year? And also, what about the Mach 1 chassis 360 sprint car series?
The 360 stuff, I don't know if we'll do. We sort of kicked that around, and a lot of that stuff falls. Since we all have everybody on the crew, including me, you know, basically have full-time jobs, it gets, you know, when they send the race schedule over, I'm thinking, when am I going to have time to work? But so a lot of the weekday stuff is very tough for me because I got to leave 2 hours earlier than anybody for them to get out there, and then I got to drive home and, you know, work the next day. So the lot of the 360 stuff, I don't know if we're going to do. We're talking about maybe going to Lernerville because they got a lot of good paying shows this year. That's what they're one. Get me to Eldora. I think we might actually venture to Port a couple of times on a regular Saturday night. So I don't even know how to, we're, the only real point thing that we really want to get is the Grove, just so you can be on that elite board. And we've, you know, we finished second there the last 2 years. So that one's sort of our nemesis right now.
I was going to ask you about that. What's been the Achilles heel that has kept you guys sitting in second place over the last 2 years? What do you have to work on to move one rung up the ladder?
It's us. We pretty much shoot ourselves in the foot, trying to get better. You know, you're always trying to find that little bit of speed, and you know, unfortunately now, with the way that the cars and the tires and everybody's got basically the exact same motor horsepower wise, if you don't bring your A game every night, you're going to finish fifth. You know, and that's part of the deal where you just try to get better, and sometimes you hurt yourself, and that's pretty much what we did the last 2 years. This year, if we would have changed the motor when we thought it was going sick at the National Open, we probably could have won it. I sort of wanted to won it because the Lance getting hurt, you know what I mean? You really don't want to win a championship because the guy that's leading or whatever gets hurt. So I'm glad to see he's good and he's going to get better and he's getting out. So really, yeah, I mean, but a championship's a championship. You know, that was still been a good deal.
And the drive for five at Lincoln, what do you see as the keys to that championship?
That one, you know what? That one's going to be tough because, like I said, the All-Stars are at Port a couple of times, and they're going to pay well. So we're really up in the air about that. So we're actually going into the season not really chasing Lincoln. If you can finish well and if you can finish in the top five, obviously, because you know, we've won the championship without winning a race. But if you're not going to show up every week, when you show up, you better win because that place is tough and it's getting tougher.
Sounds very interesting. Brian, listen, we want to thank you very much for your time. Best of luck to you guys. Have a safe season out there. And we look forward to seeing you on the 25th of February at the Lincoln Speedway, the defending champion of the Icebreaker for the 410 Sprint Cars.
Thanks, sir. I appreciate it.
Brian Monteith, The Edge, joining us here on our Pennsylvania Sprint Car Preview Show. We'll take a break and be back with more right after this.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
And welcome back, race fans, to our special edition of the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Our continuing coverage of the Pennsylvania Sprint Car scene as the Posse have their lid lifter this coming Saturday, February the 25th, weather permitting, of course, at the Lincoln Speedway. But what folks may not know about Pennsylvania is that we also have a 305 series, the Pennsylvania Sprint Series, and they'll kick off their season on April the 7th at Path Valley, a 40-date schedule on tap for the 305 series this year. And we're joined now by Rod Ord, who does a lot of the promotions, handles the PR, does the scheduling, and has been racing sprint cars for 30 years. So, Rod, I guess the only thing you haven't done in your career has been a race director or own a racetrack. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, hey, thanks for your time. It's great to talk with you here. 1998, this series came about. What brought about the 305 series? And as a longtime racer, what benefits early on did you see that has led to the continued success and longevity of this series here in what is arguably the sprint car capital of the world?
Tom Warwick, who does our engine tech and really does most of the heavy lifting for the series, and a group of guys, Jerry Reinhart and Todd Lynn and Gordy Lynn, looked at this, I think, as an alternative from four-cylinder sprint cars. They talked with French Grimes, who was, starting out with his Race Saver series in Virginia, and, decided to put some races together at Heston Speedway and Path Valley, and really built from there. I came in a few years later and made the mistake of volunteering to do the website for the series, and kind of got drawn into to helping out with everything. But I was attracted because I knew French from years ago and racing at Sealands Grove, and it was always fun racing with French, and I knew he was very technical-minded, and that even though I didn't know a lot about the rules, I knew that the rules package that he put together had to be solid. That's what drew me into it. And as a matter of fact, the engine that we'll be starting the season with this year is the exact same rotating assembly from the first year, actually probably the second year of the series. So the only thing that's changed really is a cam and a block.
That's interesting. So you have spent time in the 410s racing at Sealands Grove. Tell me a little bit about what was it like to race a 410 back in the day and then change over and race in a 305. I have to assume that there was a considerable learning curve going from a very fast race car to a still fast race car, but the difference between a 410 and 305 does sound pretty significant.
Well, when I raced 410s, they called them sprint cars. We didn't have these numbers that we associated. frequently I was running, whatever I had. I ran a lot of, 350s or 358 or 377. And there was a bit of a layover a few years before I started racing with Race Saver. And to be honest, when I got in, I didn't remember that big of a difference. It was a smaller track. There's really no, appreciable difference in sitting in the car. Now, the horsepower, I did get a chance to run some 360 and 410 stuff later on, and the 410 horsepower and the 360s is just, you know, and sometimes it's scary, you know, compared to what we're doing. But to be honest, the horsepower on these smaller tracks really isn't a big factor.
Now, you guys do run a variety of different tracks, but we don't see Selins Grove on here. Have you talked with the folks about possibly having a 305 race date at Selins Grove, or is it that big and that powerful of a track that, as you stated in your website, you guys are more recreational? Are there factors weighing in as to why we have not seen a 305 race at Selins Grove?
We had an opportunity a few years ago. We actually passed it up because we were dealing with Heston Speedway changing ownership, and we didn't know what was happening there. So we passed that up. I don't know that they are particularly interested in what we're doing. They're doing a great job up there on Saturday nights with what they're doing in the sprint car ranks. And I love Selins Grove. Certainly, I think some of the guys would like to be up there and try it out. But, maybe that happens someday. It's not something I'd say it wouldn't work. But I think as the tracks get bigger with the difference in horsepower, there's a little bit of a difference in competition as opposed to, the tight competition and the horsepower as it applies to, the smaller tracks and 3/8 miles and such. But we missed that opportunity. I hope to get up to Selins Grove this year and maybe do a 360 race with URC or something like that. We haven't been there yet.
We're talking with Rod Ord from the PA Sprint Series. You can check out their website at pasprintseries.com. And this year, as we mentioned before, 40 race dates, including 12 at Clinton County. Talk a little bit, Rod, about what it means to have Vern Watson come to you guys. And last year, after having just a couple of races at the track, this year, 12 races, including being on the card on April the 29th, a Sunday afternoon, with the All-Star Circuit of Champions.
We're pretty excited about getting more opportunities up at Clinton County, and I think that a lot of race teams have come to the series this year because of that. In the past, Vern has seen us as a good alternative, and as things have changed up there at Clinton County, I think he's seen an opportunity there to have us on a regular basis and to give the fans a real tight competition, a good steady diet of sprint car racing. We should bring a good show there. We have a lot of guys really interested, and we're looking forward to those races on Friday night at Clinton County.
And, of course, you guys are also on the card at Lincoln with the All-Stars, so that's another good night of exposure in front of a great crowd. One of the interesting items about the PA Sprint Series, it is by invitation only. Can you address how that came about, and what are some of the reactions that you get from drivers when they approach you, regardless of what form of racing or what form of sprint car racing they may or may not have been in, and they find out that this is an invitation only to race with you folks?
That really is the thing that sets us apart. We started out, French's deal was an invitation only thing, and we've always been that way. Over the years, it's got more and more popular. We've had people, that want to come race with us, and I think it's more a fact of people that don't talk to us than it is people that do. I think what a lot of people would agree with this recreational racing, and what we're trying to do is make it a place for, the occasional racer to show up. And with, the professional teams, the big teams, it's pretty inexpensive just to drop an engine in and show up at some of our races. And as we would see that situation getting more and more likely, we kind of stepped back and said, listen, we're just going to talk to every single team, and we'll talk to anybody. But I was talking to Donnie Kreitz the other day and kind of explaining this to him, and because had some, you know, misinformation about the series. But anyhow, you know, I said, you know, Donnie, if you were going to come race with us, our first question would be, listen, you can race every week in a 410. You've got that stuff. Why would you want to do it? And he really agreed. It's merely our way of making sure that everybody comes into the series, understands everything, the purse, the rules. It helps us to make sure that it's very clear that things aren't going to change and that our purse is going to remain affordable for the tracks. And sometimes guys, you know, look in a different direction, but we've got a real good group of racers, guys and gals, that we're excited about.
And it was interesting when I was looking on the website and reading, I saw what the purse was, and you're only running a 20-lap feature, and the winner gets $265, which is considerably down from what they're paying out in 358 and 410 sprint car racing here in central Pennsylvania. So as a recreational driver, I know from having seen you guys in action at Clinton County, everybody is professional. It is a situation where you do approach the races as very professionally as anybody else does, but how does a driver save money based on what the current costs are of the engine and the chassis, the wings? How is a person that runs it with your series that only pays $265 win, where does the cost saving come in to help these drivers race year in and year out?
Well, you know, when I raced back in the day, you know, I always felt like the rich were getting richer and the poor were getting poorer. You know, we always talk about, geez, they only pay $265 to win. But if you look back through the field, you know, and you compare us to all the other purses, if you look at a purse in Central PA for any sprint car series, half of the purse is in the top five. And then you wonder why sometimes you only have five competitive cars. You know, in our deal, we spread that out. Basically, Race Saver says, you know, what we shoot for is at last place or any position doesn't pay any less than half of the winning. And we're a little bit off of that. But, you know, we want everybody to be compensated for coming out that night at the racetrack. The way we keep the cost down is obviously with the engine rules and the way we do things. We try to make sure that the drivers are respectful of each other and they're not tearing up the equipment. But the engine rules allow you to, you know, run an engine. We go about 30, 35 races before we even think about rebuilding our engine. And even when you do that, most of the guys can do it in a garage setting and freshen that thing up and get back into business for way less than you're going to spend on one of those other, you know, higher horsepower, more expensive engines.
Well, Rod, as we mentioned before, you guys have been in existence since 1998, and obviously you have a business model that continues to be attractive, and 40 race dates here in 2012 with a season opener on April the 7th at Path Valley, and the season will conclude at the Clinton County Raceway with the Fall Fun Fest, and that's October 19th and 20th. We want to thank you for taking time out to be part of us, to be with us here on our Pennsylvania Sprint Car Preview Show, and wish you guys all the best of luck and have a safe season out there throughout your touring of Central Pennsylvania and other regional Race Saver events.
Well, thanks a lot, Sean. I really appreciate you having me on.
Sure thing. Rod Ord joining us from the PA Sprint Series. Again, if you'd like to learn more about them, log on to pasprintseries.com or stop by and see Rod or any one of the drivers at any of the races if you're interested in learning how you can get an invitation to go and race 305 Sprint Car Racing here in Central Pennsylvania. We'll take a break and be back with more right after this. With 30 years' experience, Kinzer Air Filters is a trusted name in the racing industry. Their 360-degree dome positive charge air filter is the cleanest air filter on the market. From sprint cars and midgets to late models, drivers rely on Kinzer air filters as a brand they can trust while being economically affordable. It's easy to use and cleans with soap and water. To learn more, call Roger Kinzer at 812-327-7103. That's 812-327-7103 or visit kinzerdirect.com. Kinzer air filters. Made in the USA. Welcome back, race fans, to the Sprint Car Show. Special thanks to our guests, Lance DeWeese, Brian Monteith, and Rod Ort. We'll have more interviews for you this week as we count down to the season opening lid lifter at the Lincoln Speedway on Saturday afternoon, weather permitting. And just a reminder, coming up Tuesday night, July the 10th, we will be live at the Sharon Speedway with a special edition of the Sprint Car Show, and that will precede our fly-to-fly coverage of the third annual Lou Blaney Memorial featuring the 410 Sprint Cars and the Big Block Modifieds. Tony Stewart, Casey Kane, and Dave Blaney all racing 410s that night. Again, Tuesday night, July the 10th, we'll be live with the Sprint Car Show and fly-to-fly webcast coverage of the third annual Lou Blaney Memorial. Today's broadcast of the Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Rod N Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. By Penske Racing Shots, the competitive advantage of champions. By Kinzer Air Filters, proudly made in the USA. And by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. That's all for our show today. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week, February the 25th. Stevie Smith will be joining us to talk about the return of the Black Bandit right here on the Sprint Car Show. Have a great day and look for more shows during the week as we get rolling with the racing season here in Central Pennsylvania. So long, everybody.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.